Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 24, Council Candidate Forum, Stephen Gwynn, Cedar City.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. We are so glad that you're here. We are continuing our series of interviewing municipal candidates. And today we are thrilled to have Stephen Gwynn with us. Stephen is a candidate for Cedar City Council. I should introduce us. Sometimes I forget. I'm Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
We are your ever-present hosts for Color Country Politics. But we'll jump in right now with Stephen Gwynn. So, as you know, we are asking a lot of trick questions and really trying to trip you up. Just kidding. We're asking all of the candidates essentially the same questions, and our goal is to get the information out to the voters, you know, as best we can, and get information out there so that the voters can make their best decision. So let's just start with, tell us about yourself.
Let's see. I am originally not from Cedar, but my family moved here almost 2 decades ago. I've lived here for almost a decade. I'll be a decade in August. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental biology. I have a master's degree in public administration. What else is there? I have a wife and 2 toddlers. My wife is employed as a faculty member at SUU. I'm currently employed with a young and growing bank called Solera National Bank, which does... what's the best way to say this? Self-directed IRA checkbook control.
So,
like I said, we've been here in Cedar almost a decade now, and love it, and particularly love the people here. One of the best things we noticed right off the bat was the people.
It takes a little bit of crazy to decide to run for office and put yourself out there. What made you decide to take the plunge?
Well, in my case, it might be a lot of crazy.
It helps.
It definitely helps. I think as I've been very involved over the years with various issues. Back when my family first moved here, I used to go and speak with Mayor Sherritt about different aspects of the downtown community. My mom was actually the coordinator or director of the Christmas tree festival used to be really big here. We still have a tree festival every year. It's done by Brian Swanson of the theater department. So I was very involved. And then when I moved here 10 years ago, I stayed very involved. And in my discussions with various neighbors and friends and other members of the community and even city officials and employees, some people said on occasion, hey, you need to run for office here. Now, I'm not sure if they really meant that or if they were just trying to get me to be quiet.
Well, now you called their bluff.
Yeah, I guess I have. So now you guys all have to vote for me.
Yeah.
But then last year, and I guess in previous years as well, I've sat in several city meetings, whether they were city council or commission meetings. And particularly in one group of meetings that a lot of us attended, I noticed that people seem to be very discouraged. In the meetings I'm currently thinking of, a lot of people came to those meetings. This one was with the Planning Commission and some others with the City Council, all over the same issue. There were hundreds of people. There were overflowed out into the hallway. There was as many in the hallway as there were in the chamber. And they, by far, 99.9% of them got up, came up to the podium, one right after another, asked the City Council not to do what was proposed. And they presented statistics, they presented research, they presented data, and the few people on the other side of the issue, the businesses, in this case, there were some organizations and some businesses, and there were very few, two, three at the most, presented poor data and poor research. And even some experts who were in the citizenry who got up to speak pointed out that whose data was actually more reliable. And then the Planning Commission and the city voted for the proposal anyway, in spite of all of these citizens, all of these regular, average, everyday people who said, please don't do this like this. This is not a good plan. And I watched as those people left, and I saw the look on their face of, I don't matter. I am not valued. My life and what I have to deal with on a daily basis is not important. And I realized that they felt the same way I felt, because I felt unheard. Like, I don't want to say condescended to, but like I didn't matter. And it's one thing if I go in and I say, hey, this doesn't work for me and I'm all by myself. But when you literally have hundreds of individuals come in there and they're just, well, they feel ignored. And so this last year, I remembered the old saying, you know, put up or shut up. So you can keep talking or you can get up and try to do something.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
That's great. Well, one of the things that we like to hear from the candidates that we're interviewing is, what are some things that you feel like the city is doing well? What are some things that you like about what is going on in the city?
I think the city does a lot of things very, very well. We're known as the Festival City. That has been a long-standing face of Cedar City that has been supported, that has been grown, that has been done well. I'm sure there's always ways we can improve that. Mm-hmm. In particular, I have found great and wonderful experiences with many of the city employees. We have great staff over there. I've had dealings with public works, I've had dealings with engineering, I've had dealings with inspectors, and they just really are good people working hard. They do a good job. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said, I can mention a couple. There are so many things that our city has done well in the past and continues to do well. Our first responders, I really think, are excellent people. Again, there's always room for improvement, but I think they're excellent people who work very hard, good stand-up people. Mm-hmm. And so I probably don't have time to list a whole lot of others, but there you go.
This is a plug to a previous episode. We did have Cedar City Chief of Police Darren Adams previously.
And he was spectacular. I mean, just such a wealth of information, such an approachable person. If you like Color Country Podcasts, which I know you do, go seek out that episode with Chief Adams. It's really, really informative and a really good episode.
I have actually had to contact Chief Adams through email on a couple of occasions where I needed a question answered, and everybody said, that's the person you have to. And he got back to me.
Sure.
Isn't that the greatest? Yeah. The greatest things about living in Cedar City,
right?
I mean, we do. You know, we a lot of our discussions are about growth and how to handle growth, and we do have to grow. But to just have somebody there in that position, who says, I'm responsible to Stephen Gwynn, you know, and he needs this answer, and I'm going to get it to him. Yeah. And the guy's got to have a full plate.
Oh, sure.
You know,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. No, he's a great guy.
So the flip side question is, what are some things the city has an opportunity to improve on, things that it needs to do better?
Well, I've already kind of mentioned one. In my education, in my public administration education, one of the things that I learned and one of the things that I obtained is to remember the street level perspective. how are things going to play out on the street level, on, you know, the average mom, dad, kids, their life here? How is it going to play out, say, for our tourists, our visitors who come to see Shakespeare, when they're literally walking down the street to go see Shakespeare? And I think that, and I say street level, and that equates with the average citizen being hurt, feeling like government represents them and is responsible to them. And I think that sometimes our city has made some decisions that have been great from that perspective. But in other cases, I think sometimes we get caught up in this or that, or we think that we've already got it figured out and we're not collaborating enough with the regular citizens, with the regular families and people who are here. And we're not seeing their perspective because, and again, you know, we have these meetings where people can come up and speak their mind and speak at the microphone. But if you look at several examples, one of which I just quoted to you guys or told you about, that doesn't seem to work. And so I think that the city could do better with making sure that we keep a street level, family level, personal level perspective on some of these issues that come before us. And one of the other things that kind of goes along with that is a little bit of, I think we need a bit more transparency in our dealings. You're probably familiar with some of the debates in the past about the aquatic center. You may be familiar with, for example, the medical school effort to get Rocky Vista Medical School here. I actually went and spoke with a number of city people about these issues, people who were in a position to know. And I asked, say, for example, about the Aquatic Center. One of the concerns was that, hey, there's this big, huge lobby in the Aquatic Center, and the swimming pool is not the right dimensions for the high schools to use. Now, there may be somebody out there who knows why those things ended up that way. But when I asked city council members and other people and Aquatic Center managers and people who should know, they couldn't tell me. They said, I don't know. We don't know. And I asked a lot of people. Same thing with the medical school. Now, I actually live less than a block from the site A where they wanted to put that medical school. And so it was, of course, a lot of interest to me. And I thought having a medical school in Cedar City would be really great.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can make it happen in a way that that works for everybody. Some people are concerned about, you know, their homes being affected or this or that. Let's see if we can find a way to make it work. And so I went around and talked to a lot of people. I talked with people with the city. I talked with higher ups at SUU. And when that left and went to Ivins, I went to these same people and said, what happened? They didn't know. And they should have known. They should have been. And I said, weren't you in these meetings where people were discussing this? And no, I wasn't invited.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, number one, these are people that should have known. Even if the regular public didn't see all this stuff, these people should have known. And then number two, those of us who lived right adjacent to Site A, a lot of us thought, you know, this would be good because at the time that site was really kind of blighted. Now there's Founders Hall there. But at the time that site was really kind of blighted. And we felt like, if someone had come to us and just included us in the discussion, we might be able to help figure out a way to make it work for everybody. But nobody, nobody did. I guess one more example. Are you guys familiar with the little concrete squares around your water meter in your lawn?
Yeah.
Several years ago when that happened, I didn't like it. I didn't want any more concrete in my lawn. I had a nice square lawn. And it was taking a chunk out of my, and I asked, it was actually a person I knew was handling some of the concrete installation. And I asked several people, I went to Public Works and asked, and I went to other places and asked, and nobody knew why. Somebody said that, well, it's because the water meters are sinking. Mm-hmm. And then the next person said, no, that's not true at all. It's because the grass is encroaching on the water meter heads. And then the next person said, no, that's not true at all. And finally, I got to the engineering office with the city. And they said, it's because it was put in the city code book. And the city council voted to approve the code book. And that's the only reason we know. So all these people who should have known why we did. And so I asked my friend, I said, how much do these cost? They're like $100 a piece. He said, no, more like $150. So $150 times how many households in the city?
About 10,000.
That's a lot of money. And nobody knows. There may be a good reason. There really may be a good and viable engineering reason. But the point is, a lot of our stuff that goes on is not very transparent. And when we don't have that transparency, we also lose the benefit of collaboration, which is one of the other things that I think the city needs to do. It needs to be more than just having people come up and talk at a mic, one right after the other, that just sort of blurs away in your mind and you're not really listening.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that we take advantage. We have smart people in this community, and they don't have to be a professor at the university or an expert in this. There are some great ideas that come from unexpected places. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to see the city handle transparency better and collaboration with average everyday citizens better.
That's great.
Yeah.
So do you have any specific goals that you would like to accomplish? If you're elected to the city council, what are some specifics that you would like to see?
Well, beside the things I would like to see the city do better, those are definite goals. Mm-hmm. You've had this discussion with other people about the current housing situation. And that is one of those very complicated situations that you can't just walk in and say, we're going to lower housing costs.
No, you can't.
No.
Housing is going to be priced according to what the market will bear. Mm-hmm. If I go and I build a house and it only costs me $50,000 and I sell it, I say, you know what? I want to sell somebody a cheap house. I'm going to sell it for $75,000. I'll make 20. I got it cheap. I'm going to sell it cheap. That person is going to look at that house and say, I've got an instant $150,000 in equity. And they're going to flip it and sell it for $200,000 or more. Mm-hmm. I mean, the median home price right now is $230,000?
About $220,000.
$220,000 right now. I will tell you that, just so everybody knows, I have spent a lot of time the last few years being a stay-at-home dad. My job with Solera Bank is very recent. Even with a master's degree, I have struggled to find work. So I've been a stay-at-home dad, go to school part-time, stay-at-home dad part-time. I've had other temporary jobs that were, you know, only set up for a specific time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But I have struggled, like a lot of people who love Cedar City, would love to stay here, and end up struggling.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a professor at SUU, and we very recently decided that we might want to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a couple of years ago, we started looking into, we need to make a change. Our family's growing. We need a bigger place that's a little more functional for us. And so we started looking around. And we got online and we put in all the calculators that say, how much home can you afford? And so we put in as much money as we were making, which is, you know, mostly my wife's salary from SUU. And she's been there 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
She's tenured. We could not afford a median-priced home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we were well below it. We were in the 170s, according to the calculators. And I did multiple calculators because, you know, some of them are probably off. So I wanted a good average and make sure I was getting accurate information. And it was very disconcerting, like it is for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see the city get involved with this, but I realize that the city cannot simply mandate lower prices. The city can't simply dump a bunch of money into paying for housing for people. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is we have to get with the home builders. We have to say, how can we support you? How can we make this? Because eventually what's going to happen is your supply is going to exceed your demand. As long as demand exceeds supply, the prices are going to continue to go up. And who's going to increase our supply? Our home builders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what can we do to help them build more? Maybe if we can do something to help them, they can build 6 houses this year instead of only 4, or 20 instead of 10, depending upon the size of their operation. And then as supply catches up to demand, we will begin to see some of those prices come back. One of the things that I think we can do is as a city, we can search for grants for lower income housing, to build more lower income housing. We can bring in grant money to help pay for some of the costs of those things. We can advocate on behalf of our businesses, including our home builders, with the state. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I would like to see the city do a little more of. I've had a number of friends who own businesses tell me that there's a big burden on businesses in the city. They feel like there's a burden. And so what can we do to alleviate some of that burden? Are there specific regulations that we can remove? Are there specific fees that we can lessen? If not, can we advocate for our businesses with, say, other legislative bodies like the state? Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, if you own a business in Utah, you pay property tax on your business furniture.
Yes.
I just learned that listening to Dr. T on the radio. Thanks, Dr. T. I was stunned. Mm-hmm. But we do, as a city, we do have a voice, even if we don't need any more regulations, we don't need any more fees. We have a voice that we can advocate in behalf of. I don't want to call it a bully pulpit because it's not like we're Salt Lake. But we can advocate, and we can find ways, and we can push and pursue grants and help people pursue grants for lower housing. One of the other things that I have been concerned about is how our master plan is being handled. I remember, I'm going to forget his name now, Dorian Page, mm-hmm. former vice president of finance at SUU. I heard him in one of these city meetings quote the master plan. And the part that he quoted was very much about leaving families and neighborhoods as a priority in the city master plan. And I'm very concerned, as my wife and I have been looking for a home. This is not an invitation for any realtors to call me. No offense. we noticed that a lot of the places that were within our price range, and I can only imagine so many people, are now townhomes, mm-hmm. condos, and they're even questionable. They're on the high end of our price range. And there's nowhere for kids to play. Now, we have some great parks. That's one of the things I love about Cedar City, is we have some great parks. But single mom or stay-at-home dad cannot pack up the kids in the car. And, you know, if you're lucky, you live a block away and you can walk.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's 5-6 blocks and you've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, you've got to pack them up in the car and you've got to pack a bag and you've got to do this and you've got to do that before you can go play outside. And we know, as parents, we know all the most recent research says kids have got to have outside time. They've got to have physical play, and not just 20 minutes. Not just 30 minutes. They need a couple of hours every day. And yet our lowest income housing, I passed through some the other day. One, I shouldn't mention any of them by name, but one of them's name specifically referred to green space.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no green space. It was all rocks in the front, you know, 5 feet off the curb, as many condos as you could get. And there was one centrally located green space that had a big pavilion on it and not enough room for any kids to run. Now, that being said, here's our home builders who were paying a ton of money for this property and a ton of money in fees and investing a ton of money and hoping, because their profit margins are tight, hoping that they can get their money back out of it. And if you put a whole bunch of big old green space in there where they could have put condos or townhomes, they may end up not making any money. So it's a really complicated situation. But can the city step in and do something to help? Can we provide some incentives? Can we do something to offset the cost so that if a builder does put in a good green space that is right there outside your condo for your kids to play in, that it will offset those costs so that their operation will still be profitable for them?
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather do something like that than what some cities have done is a mandate that you have to have such a percentage of green space. Mm-hmm. Some cities have found it necessary to do that. But I'm very concerned about our lower income, younger families. We have a lot of young families. They're just starting out. They don't have a lot of money to afford a lot of that type of housing with a big backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very concerned. One of the things that I try to do is I try to look long term. I try to say, if we do this and we do this and we do this, how's this going to play out? And I'm seeing kids who don't have anywhere to go play unless they take a trip to the park.
Mm-hmm.
And a mom who's really tired because she's mm-hmm. working a job at home while her husband works, or vice versa. Dad who stay at home, done that, and who's trying to work a part-time job while mom's mm-hmm. working a full-time job and is exhausted and mm-hmm. doesn't have time to go pack everybody up into the car and go to the park. And I know that may sound silly to some people, but you got to be there. Dads, if you haven't been a stay-at-home dad and you haven't had to pack that diaper bag and pack some water and make sure there was a change of diapers and then get two or three kids all coordinated, don't let anyone run into the street while you're trying to get them all in the car, okay, and make sure everybody's got sunscreen and a protective hat.
And snacks.
And snacks. Thank you. Yeah. See, even I'm forgetting some stuff. And there's more. There's more. As you walk out the door, you're going to be... If you haven't done that, trust me, it's better and easier if you can just let your kids play outside right there where you can just step out and if you need to get back in the house. But what I see is kids who are... Where do they go? Inside. Where are they playing? In the living room. On the couch, in front of the TV,
mm-hmm.
or in front of the video game console.
Especially a shame here, because we have so many great outdoor activities within a short distance mm-hmm. of us.
Exactly.
And I've seen some of the kind of neighborhoods you're talking about where it's a bunch of townhomes built around a central park. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are really nice.
We have some of our older townhome developments have a nice little park. There's one right north of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful little playground in there with some good space to run. And all of the condos almost face that. So it's very easy. But all the new ones that I see going up. And so my concern is then what do you create? You create kids who sit around, who sit in front of the TV. You're almost to the point where you're starting a poverty mm-hmm. mentality. A poverty culture. You're starting generation one of generational poverty mentality. A sit around, somebody else is going to, you know, you don't get out and get going and get doing anything. And now, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a sociologist, so don't quote me on that. But I cannot see anything long-term good come from our children not having places to play. At the same time, I understand the situation that our developers are in and that our home builders are in. And so as a city, I think we need to remember that our master plan says families. We need to be helping, aiding, advocating, incentivizing anything we can to help our home builders fulfill that. And one of the things we need to stop doing is spot changing the master plan. I have sat in meetings where I remember this same set of meetings I was in. I said, how did they change the master plan? And the person next to me said, oh, it's no big deal. It just takes a minute. And sure enough, when they voted to change the master plan, it was all of like 30 seconds. to change the master plan. And I would like to see the master plan become more durable, harder to change. In fact, I think in this one meeting, there were all five city council members were not there. I think the mayor was gone. And so one city council member had to fill in for the mayor. And so they couldn't vote because they were filling in for the mayor. So I think that's really, really important. And I think it's important from an economic standpoint as well. If we're spot changing the master plan all around downtown, and we're letting this apartment building come in here and this apartment building, we don't really have a plan we have confidence in to follow and to go forward with, we're going to end up with urban blight downtown. And then what happens? All those people had those nice walks along those tree-lined streets to go to Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. All those people who are walking from here or there to come to Pastry Pub, to Centrino's, to Park Place, and those other businesses, and other businesses that are downtown. Mm-hmm. They're going to look at that urban blight, and they're going to be turned off. And so it's going to adversely impact. So I feel like our master plan needs to be more durable. I think we need to remember that families are a real long-term growth strength. And this spot changing of the master plan, I don't even know what for sometimes. It's just not a good sound strategy for a long-term success.
Yeah. Well, you know, the saying in real estate is all about location, location, location. You buy a house or a piece of property with the idea of here's what's going to be around me now and in the future. And I've seen the consternation of, hey, that's changing in ways that don't make any sense or not expected. Like, it's one thing is saying, oh, we're going to go from, you know, acre lots to half acre lots. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, they're still single family homes, who cares? But going from, you know, oh, these are single family homes to three story apartment buildings, that's when people are like, hold on a minute, that's not quite what I had in mind.
Right. There are some and a master plan cannot be immutable. I mean, it can't just be in stone forever.
Yeah.
We have to be able to adjust and to change. Things like, you know, how many years ago was it that SUU said, okay, we're gonna double our student population? We have to make room for those changes, but the type of hodgepodge, spot change this, spot change that, let this special interest, whatever, come in here and do this and whatever, do that, that's not going to create long-term success. And it is going to create urban blight. I've seen it. A lot of other people have seen it in other places. It is going to create an urban blight situation that is going to adversely affect our wonderful downtown. Back in my hometown, I will tell you that the city, I'm from a town called Hattiesburg, Mississippi, originally.
Mm-hmm.
And the downtown area basically died. Mm-hmm. It completely died, and all the houses that were built out west of town. And I once asked a developer, why don't more people want to build in the downtown area? And he said, it's too expensive. We get out of the city limits in order to build because it's too expensive. And so all of the economy and all of the money and all of the tax foundation, property tax, moved out of the city. And for decades, the downtown area and all of its homes and all the people who lived there was crime-ridden, poverty-ridden, blight. And it's only been, say, in the last, I guess they probably started 20 years ago trying to reestablish downtown, because it had been this way literally since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're starting to have some success, and some parts of downtown are starting to come back. But it's better, far better, to prevent it
sure.
from happening
yeah.
than
yeah.
it ever is to try to come back from it and mm-hmm. fix it.
You look at, you know, cities who have done that. You know, Detroit's a good example. I mean, they literally bulldozed blocks of the mm-hmm. town that they just couldn't afford to maintain anymore mm-hmm. because they were empty. You know, they're finally starting to turn it around, but it came at a significant cost. Downtown Little Rock's another good example. They have been really sprucing up the area right by the river to make it a really nice area to go visit and walk around. And now don't go more than a few blocks away from that area, because that's when things start looking pretty sketchy. People have to spend they have to get really down to rock bottom to where someone says, oh, I can buy that lot for $500. Yeah, okay, I'll start building.
You're absolutely right. I would really like to see people embrace the idea that there's room for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, if you look at the map, the zoning map, and you look at the entire area around downtown, so blocks east, blocks west, north, south, you're very hard-pressed to find an R1 area of any significant amount. I think there's an R1 area that's 200 south and 700 west to 1,000. Mm-hmm. And although a lot of the other areas look like there are R1, there actually are three.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's room for everybody. I think we can have several areas on all sides of downtown that are R1. I think mm-hmm. we can have several areas that are R3. I mean, we probably need some more R3 right around campus. But we also need some R1 right around campus. If you look at really great campuses, you drive up to the University of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
There are some wonderful old neighborhoods extremely close to campus that have been preserved.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the ambiance of a university that people love. And so I think we should preserve some R1 areas around campus, but we still have to make room for campus to grow. And there are a lot of other areas where businesses or other areas need to grow. But if we don't have some R1 areas, eventually what you're going to have is our housing prices are going to come down. And all of these new condominiums are going to be, 5 or 10 years old. They're not going to look quite so pretty anymore. And the people in those condos are going to say, you know what? Housing prices are down. We can afford to move. And so you're going to have that housing is going to become your lowest income housing. And we all know, as much as we don't judge, that those areas often can attract a higher percentage of trouble, of crime, of blight, of distasteful appearance.
You concentrate the poverty, you concentrate the crime.
Well, yeah. And so eventually the market is going to turn, and the people with the lowest income and the most difficulty and the most, and they're going to go to that lowest price housing, and it's going to be here right next to downtown because we've made it all R3 and allowed it all to be because naturally higher density housing is lower priced. That's one of its whole purposes, is to provide people with a place to live at a lower price.
Yeah.
But it also it has more risk of these other factors coming in. But if we preserve at least some areas in downtown for everybody, whether they be low income, high density housing, or higher income, larger lots, bigger housing, I just think there's room for everyone. I think if we all get together, we collaborate together, we can find a way to make it happen. It won't be perfect. It might not be pretty. We might have some tense discussions. It's okay. But I just think that I really want us to handle this master plan and families. I have heard about this 2050 vision.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about it on your last podcast.
Good. Yeah. Excellent.
I've actually heard of it before. And I've actually been to, remind me of his name.
Chris McCormick.
I've actually been to his, I believe it was him, but I went to his office and talked to him, and I saw a couple things they were working on, and he really has a good mind.
Mm-hmm.
I really was. So I have to go and watch the podcast that
if you haven't seen it, it's really, really interesting. And Chris just sort of lays out just sort of the background information of what is Vision 2050, why are we doing, why is he doing Vision 2050? And I think later this year, we'll probably get to the sort of implementation phase, which is going to be really fascinating. So go back and watch that one. And if you haven't seen the episode with Chris McCormick from the Chamber of Commerce, it's really fascinating. And it'll kind of give sort of a foundation for what some of the other goals are coming up. So that was my plug.
Good job.
Two old episode plugs in one episode. We're on a roll.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let's say you're over at the Heritage Center. You hop on an elevator with a voter. You've got a couple minutes to tell them why they should vote for you. What do you tell them?
I think what I tell them is, I'm just going to say it. Have you had enough? I know there's some people who are really frustrated. I know they're struggling to make ends meet. They're finding our economy has left them out. And I think even a lot of people who aren't in that position, people who've been here for 30, 40, their whole lifetime, people who are high-end professionals, I think they feel left out. And I think if you want somebody who has the education and the expertise to understand what's going on, who is family-oriented as well as business-oriented, who is detail-minded, who's going to ask questions, who wants to hear your experience and what you're going through and what you're dealing with on the street level, literally, when you walk out your door onto the street. I think that's what I bring. That's what I hope to bring. I love Cedar City. I want to help make it a long-term success. And I guess that's my plug.
Okay.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you again. We sure appreciate your time and
thank you for having
coming
me.
In. You've been watching Stephen Gwynn, candidate for Cedar City Council, and you've been watching him on Color Country Politics. As you know, we're excited and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.